I'm presenting work that I conducted at the University of Minnesota before I came to the California Department of Public Health STD Control Branch. And it is about abnormal anal cytology and anal human papillomavirus infection in women with genital dysplasia. So those of you that are familiar with HPV, this will be old hat to you, that HPV is one of the most common sexually transmitted diseases, and an estimated 80% of sexually active people will acquire the infection by age 50. And estimates of incidence and prevalence are that 20 million people are currently infected with HPV, and that there are approximately 5 to 6 million new infections annually. It's pretty well established now that high-risk HPV types or oncogenic HPV types are causal in the development of cervical cancer and cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, which is a cervical cancer precursor in certain situations. But as well, high-risk HPV types are also detected in approximately 90% of vulvar dysplasia, vaginal and anal dysplasia, as well as anal cancers. And just to look at anal cancer in the United States, in the general population, it is not a huge issue. Among women and men, based on SEER data, anal cancer occurs in about 2.1 cases per 100,000 people. Now, some of you may know that there are groups that are at much higher risk for anal cancer, including HIV-positive men who have sex with men. And certain researchers have suggested in both the literature as well as in editorials that women with genital dysplasia may also be at higher risk for anal cancer than the general population. However, the data on anal HPV infection in this population, anal dysplasia, and anal cancer precursors is really not well understood. And also, it's been stated in the literature that women who have genital dysplasia may be a potential target for anal cancer screening. But again, this is not really supported by tons of data yet. And this is all a salient issue, anal cancer prevention, that is, because of the introduction of the quadrivalent HPV vaccine, which was licensed for the prevention of cervical dysplasia and cervical cancer, but some of you may not know that it was also approved for prevention of vaginal and vulvar dysplasia. So it would stand to reason that the vaccine might be effective against anal dysplasia and anal cancer as well, but actually the effect of the vaccine on anal HPV infection and anal dysplasia is actually unknown at this time. So I wanted to look at this population of women with genital dysplasia who might potentially be at higher risk for anal HPV infection and anal dysplasia. And the first aim I had was to look at the type-specific prevalence of anal HPV infection. And then I just wanted to see what was the prevalence of abnormal anal cytology in this population. And then also to see if we could find any risk factors for anal HPV and abnormal anal cytology in women. This was a cross-sectional study that was a convenient sample of consecutive women that presented at two university-based colposcopy clinics at the University of Minnesota. My recruitment time frame for these patients was between April of 2006 to March of 2007, so it was a 12-month time span. So the inclusion criteria was basically any adult woman. She needed to have a biopsy-confirmed diagnosis of either high-grade cervical dysplasia, vulvar, vaginal dysplasia, or a new diagnosis of cervical, vulvar, or vaginal cancer. My exclusion criteria was anyone that obviously had a prior or current history of anal cancer was excluded. Anyone who had prior radiation treatment to the pelvic region for any other type of cancer, because those radiation changes can affect the results of anal cytology. Anyone who had surgical absence of the rectum or anus due to abdominal perineal resection, for example. And of course, anyone who had received one or more doses of the HPV vaccine was excluded. So study procedures, we gave everyone a self-administered anonymous questionnaire, and it went over basic demographic information, medical history, sexual history, of course, tobacco use. And with sexual history, we did focus also on anal sex practices. Everyone received an anal cytology, which is nothing like receiving a pap smear. It's just simply a Q-tip inserted inside the anal canal and rotated 360 degrees, so it doesn't involve a speculum or anything really invasive. And then we put those in liquid cytology media. After the anal pap smear was performed, that residual liquid media was utilized to perform HPV testing and typing. So this is the subject diagram. I approached 112 women for their consent, and 8 refused, so we had a response rate of about 92%. 104 enrolled in the study, and because women were coming from different areas of Minnesota, and some of the areas were quite rural, some of the women came with their biopsy results that were greater than 6 months from the time that their biopsy was actually performed. Those people we did repeat colposcopy on and repeat biopsy, and their lesions had either regressed or were undetectable, so we did not enroll them in the study. Finally, we ended up with 102 women. And here are some of the characteristics of the subjects. Basically, just to paint a picture of the average woman in the study, 35 years old, a huge proportion of them were Caucasian, a lot of smokers, smoking was defined as greater than 100 cigarettes in your lifetime, and very few immunosuppressed people, either through immunosuppressive medications because of transplant or because of HIV. So a mostly immunocompetent young population. Median number of sexual partners was 7, with a very large range of 1 to 100. And about a third had had sex before the age of 16, and a third had had anal sex. But very few, only 11%, had had sex in the anal sex in the 3 months prior to their presentation to clinic. So just to look at the prevalence of anal HPV infection, 92 out of 102 had sufficient DNA to perform the analysis because we did use an internal control to check for specimen adequacy. And of those 92, about half and half had anal HPV infection and half did not. And if we just look at the women that had anal HPV infection, thinking about the vaccine in particular, about 34% of the women that had anal HPV had a cancer-causing type that is currently found in the vaccine. About 13% had type 6 or 11, which is a non-oncogenic type that is currently found in the vaccine. And then 36% had a cancer-causing type that is not available in the vaccine. And the rest had a benign type that is unlikely to cause disease and is also not found in the vaccine. So if we want to look just at the distribution of types, you'll see that there are actually a greater number of infections than the actual number of women, because 11 women actually had multiple HPV types in the anus at the same time. And if we would just want to look at the distribution of types, you'll see that of the oncogenic types, type 16 was definitely the most prevalent. Type 18 was actually, these are very small numbers, but type 18 was a smaller proportion. There was a good number of infections with type 53. And when we look at the non-oncogenic types, type 6 was definitely the most prevalent. And if we want to look at which patients had abnormal anal cytology, there were very few. This was actually much lower than I expected. There were only 9 out of 102 that had abnormal anal cytology. The cytology diagnoses I list down below. But actually, all of the women that underwent biopsy for their abnormal anal pap only had low-grade anal dysplasia. So we did not find any anal cancers or high-grade dysplasia in this population. And when I looked at risk factors, given that there were very few positives, when we looked at risk factors for anal HPV, there were some non-significant trends. But we did not find any association with anal sex, recent anal sex, or a history of anal warts, not significant associations at any rate. And when we looked for associations between the sort of typical risk factors that you think about for HPV infection or cervical disease, we did not find associations with age, tobacco use, age of sexual debut, or number of sexual partners. So just to comment on the limitations of this study, this is a mostly Caucasian insured population in a university setting. We did have a small sample size. and the HPV types that each of these women had at their genital lesion was unknown. But the strengths are that this is the first study to look at which anal HPV types are found in these women, and does provide us a greater understanding of what potential impact the vaccine might have. So just to conclude, women with genital neoplasia certainly are at risk for anal HPV infection. We found about 50% of them did have anal HPV. But the hopeful news is that a high proportion of the women that had anal HPV infection did have types that would be covered by the currently available quadrivalent vaccine. And that in this population, which was quite young, abnormal anal cytology was relatively rare. So I just want to acknowledge my funders for this project. And as well, I just want to give a special thank you to Dr. Heidi Bauer and Dan Wolfeiler, who helped me with the slides for this presentation. And I can be reached at the California Department of Public Health STD Control Branch at this time. And I just want to say thank you so much for your time and attention.
We have about 5 minutes for questions, and please walk to the nearest mic if you would. Can you step closer to the mic? Yes.
Yes, you know, it's interesting because when you look at the data, can you hear me? Let me repeat the question for everybody. She was asking, would I like to speculate if we did not find a significant association with anal sex and anal HPV infection in women, how are women actually getting this infection? And it's very interesting because when you look at men who have sex with men, it's the literature states over and over again that it is associated with anal intercourse. When you look at the data in women, the results are really equivocal. Some studies do find that anal sex is associated with anal HPV infection and abnormal anal cytology. Some studies find that it's not. And I've thought about it in different ways. I mean, I do think that anal sex is sort of, I guess, the most direct way to transmit the virus if you're having insertive anal intercourse with a man. But if you think about it, I think about it as the sort of trickle-down effect, that infected secretions from the vaginal area or semen that have epithelial cells that may have HPV in them can sort of trickle down and go into the anal area, because fluids mix during intercourse and the whole area is sort of moist and the virus may creep into the anus in that way. And that whole idea is called sort of a field effect, that even though the virus may, you know, be isolated to the cervix, that it's actually able to get out, you know, and onto the vulvar surface. For women that have HPV infection on the vulva, I mean, the skin of the vulva is basically continuous with the perianal area and continuous with the anus, so it could just sort of reach through there just through, you know, moisture and secretions. But the other thing is that people may not want to be honest about their anal sex practices because it is a taboo subject, and though we do our best to collect the best sexual history data we can, you know, people, we have to rely on people to report their, you know, true activity. And her question is regarding the HPV vaccine that's currently being offered to young people and what some of the side effects of the vaccine would be. And are you talking about negative side effects or adverse side effects?
Yes, the negative.
In terms of the data that I'm aware of, I think the most common sort of negative adverse effect is sort of pain at the injection site, you know, like you would get if you got a tetanus shot or whatever. As far as I know, I haven't heard of any, you know, really serious, you know, negative adverse outcomes related to actually getting the vaccine. Do you mean like serious adverse events or? Yes. You know what? That's a very good point. I mean, one of the things is that we only know that the virus, you know, so far the studies have not been long enough to say definitively that the vaccine is going to protect you forever, for example, and that if there's negative effects of the vaccine that aren't going to show up for 20 or 30 years, you're right, we don't know that information yet. It seems like in the immediate period, we can't tell that there's anything adverse that the vaccine is causing immediately. But you're right, until we study people, you know, many years out, we can't necessarily say the vaccine is 100% safe, I suppose. Lori, do you want us to add to that?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Lori. Yes. Right. Yeah, fainting, yes. Yeah. Lori, as far as you know, anything emerging from that, that's sort of a consistent pattern of an adverse event that's been... As a fainting, okay.
Thank you.
But I think very important point. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.